Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out. Say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we're going to talk about a variety of things today, because other than Ted Lasso, I don't think we watched the same stuff in the last week.
No, we really probably haven't. I mean, we may have, I mean, because we didn't really talk much except for, I had sent you a tweet about my favorite pastime of the fall, which is yelling at Collinsworth. Which officially started on Thursday night, because that motherfucker trying to bring, you could tell that he would, like, I'm just going to say this, because this is like a free for all. I literally was wringing my hands, because I just kept on, you could hear he was edging towards not here's a guy, but but he wanted to talk about Mahomes so bad, because Mahomes was injured for the entire year last year, basically. And he had to talk about him once, and you could tell Tirico was so goddamn mad. So mad that he had so much time away having to not deal with this man talking about Patrick Mahomes. And the first chance he got. The first, like, real entryway into it, I was like, oh. But it was actually a good game. Did you see any of it?
I watched a good bit of it. I kind of, like, was in and out. I was working. So, I had it up on my phone. And so, I did get to watch the last, most of the last quarter. Which, it came down to the wire was... it's a preseason game.
It's third stringers.
Yeah. It's still exciting, though. Like, it was a really, really good game. I'm shocked at how well, what's his name? Former Georgia quarterback.
Carson?
Miami. Yeah, Carson Beck.
Carson Beck, yeah.
I'm shocked at how well he seemed to do, but, again, preseason game does not necessitate, like, even if you are playing first stringers, most of the time in a preseason game, they're not, especially the linemen on either side, they're not coming at you with everything. Nobody wants to get hurt in the preseason. So, it was a pretty good game, what I did get to see. So, I kind of was going back and forth between watching that and listening to the Braves game Thursday night. So, Braves have been on a tear. The Dodgers, what happened, man?
To be perfectly honest, it's the same thing that happened last year, except for they're doing it purposefully and people can see it, which is that they're not trying. It's August. It's 100 degrees it's 100 degrees in Dodger Stadium at Chavez Ravine, and they just don't care. Even if they go on a 20 game losing streak.
Yeah, I mean, they're still
going to make it into second place.
I mean, that's what happened with the Braves, 2 months ago, is they couldn't buy a win. It was just like, what the hell happened to this team? So
And plus, they're trying to bring back, so they fucked up their rotation by bringing Skubal in. Not to say that Skubal is a bad thing, but you bring in a new pitcher into your rotation, and that screws everything up. I don't think that people really understand how much that screws something up, because you're getting prepped. Like, I don't think that people understand, like, how that rotation now gets all jacked up, and the things that you were aiming for are now no longer the teams that you were planning on playing. Now no longer are the teams that you're going to be playing.
Yeah, I mean, you're studying, like, as a pitcher, you're studying those batters. Like, you're like, all right, I'm going to start this game. Here's who is probably going to be in the lineup. And, you're working on what pitches you should throw. And, and then all of a sudden there's a new guy in the rotation, and it's like, wait, what?
Exactly. So there's that, and then, like, it's like I said, like, it's August. They last year they went on a 10-game losing streak in August. It's just the thing that they do, either by default or because they understand that when you edge towards a 100-game win season, I don't think they're going to win 100. Like, I know that that sounds crazy, but I don't think that they want to win 100. Because what happens to every team that wins 100 games?
They don't
make it.
Most of the time, they don't even get to the World Series.
So. Exactly. It's because they gassed themselves so hard. And last year, they were in third place. They were in third place when they went on their run. But they got healthy and they were rested at the right time.
And yeah, that's what it really comes down to is like that run of. You want a good run in the jump because you don't want to be behind like the Braves started last season. Like, it just, you couldn't. They were so far behind by the time you got to the All-Star break, it didn't matter what they did. So, you know, yeah, you got that. But Braves and the Dodgers are both set up like pretty good. Like, if they go into the back half of the season or the back third of the season healthy and rested and go on just a... you know, 500 tear.
Yep.
Then, I mean, you're going into the playoffs. Yeah, maybe you get a bye week, maybe you don't. But like, I don't know, that bye week never does anybody any good. It doesn't seem like.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that I guarantee you they're going to come in second place, and they're going to let the Padres go, and the Padres again, like they always do, going to be a bunch of idiots. Or the Diamondbacks, whoever they are, whoever it is, they're going to let them get into first place they're going to coast through because right now they have six, they're one game behind, like they're one game behind the Braves, right? They're
everybody's behind the Brewers. Great.
Yeah.
Let the Brewers have the off week and just be done with it.
Yeah, because like we already know what's going to happen. Brewers are going to burn themselves out. Like they're too young of a team. Like we saw it last year in the playoffs.
Yep.
They're not going to come back teams that do this don't learn. Like that's the other thing is that like as an ORG, like the Brewers are so worried about their salary and they're essentially everybody is done because they think the Dodgers are going to win, except for people like the Braves and the Phillies, in the National League, and you know. But then you go into the American League, and it's a bunch of bums. Like the Rays are a top team because no one's caring. No one's caring because it's a strike year, they think. Because, you know, well, we'll get into that later once it happens. But, you know, oh, yeah, the Dodgers are ruining baseball. No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think the billionaires are ruining baseball.
Look, even as somebody who, like, doesn't really like the deferred, like, it's much like the college, like, portal thing. But I don't really love it, but I don't think that that's the thing that's the real problem.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, no, absolutely. It's like, it's the same thing all the way through. Like every single, like my favorite part is that there are really people out there that are bootlicking for billionaires because it's not the players that are the problem. The players make this league, make every league. Like, it's the reason why you've had fantastic baseball. Like, I don't think that anybody realized over the last 4 years since COVID, since we came back from COVID, we've had amazing baseball.
Yeah, it's been a pretty incredible, you know, 4 years or so.
And it's...
That included Braves winning a World Series.
Exactly.
And the Dodgers. So
yeah. And there's no guarantee that the Dodgers are going to win this year.
Yeah.
So. I mean, like, I just look at it and it's like, it's the players, not these billionaires, and the billionaires are the problem because every single time we've had a strike, it's been over salary in any league. I mean, and you look at like the league that has the billionaires have the most control, football. It is a terrible league. It's a terrible, like, if we look at it objectively, it is not a, it is not what it used to be in the 80s and 90s, back when they weren't billionaires. Like, I feel like objectively baseball has kind of gotten better, like, all around, because we, like, I don't know, like, it's not a Yankees, it's not a Yankees fucking, or a Red Sox, like, everything seems to be kind of evened out a little bit, except for Dodgers, of course, you know, back to back. I don't know. It's a very weird time to like be a sports fan, because there's so much like rah, rah, rah for billionaires. And I'm just like, you know, I remember back in the day when we didn't know who the owners were. Fuck the owners. But everybody knows who the owners are. I know who the owners are by default. Like, I mean, like, it's wild. Like,
the owners you knew were the ones that were really like insane. Like, what's his name for the Raiders?
Davis. Yeah.
Yeah. Al Davis. In baseball, it was, what was it? Margaret, Reds owner.
Marshall.
Who was always doing something like just that, like just getting press for herself, like just saying nutty batshit things, and you know, it was stuff like that, you know. I can never side with the owners on anything.
No,
so it's just like if you don't want to pay them, don't pay them.
Yeah, but
That's what it boils down to. I said earlier, do I like the whole deferred? Like, no, I think it's kind of ridiculous. And at some point, it's going to trip up an organization pretty badly. But here's the thing. You don't have to do that.
No.
Nobody's.
You don't.
Like, just because the Dodgers are like, oh, this is how we're going to try to stack out a team. You don't have to do that. Like, you can still win. You can still play. You just have to put together a good team. Like,
yep.
You know, it's as simple as that. And if the owners, like, all agreed amongst themselves not to do it, guess what? It wouldn't fucking happen.
Mm-hmm.
So,
100%.
Like, pointing to the players and being like, they're the problem. They're greedy. And it's like, okay, well, no, I mean, they are probably, but you also don't have to pay them. And you've done, the only thing you've done for the fans is get those, like, the only thing the Dodgers organization has done for its fans is sign players that not assure that they're going to win, but give them, you know, a better than good chance of winning games and possibly the title. That's all you've done, because you haven't made it cheaper to get to a game. You haven't made it easier to get into games.
Yep.
You haven't done anything about the cost. Like, say what you will about the NFL ownership, and a lot of them are shitty, and Arthur Blank can be among those, but the stipulation for Mercedes-Benz Stadium is that if you're going to sell food in there, it's going to be reasonably fucking priced.
No. And that is Arthur Blank. Like, that's one thing I can say about him, is that he's not like pricing of tickets. That's another thing, but pricing of the food, like, you don't get out of house and home. The Suns arena for, Arizona, Phoenix Suns, they're the same way. They have like they're consistently like
a bottle of water costs $2.
Yep.
Not $7.
Nope. Not $22.50. Like, eventually people are gonna start, like, here's the thing, is that this is ownership. Players have no control over this. And eventually, you know what's gonna happen, right? People are just going to stop showing up, and they're going to start watching watching it on the TV because it's a better seat. But also, when that stops happening, when they start paying, they put it behind a paywall, guess what's going to happen? People are going to stop buying them. Yeah. It's going to stop. It's going to turn into the NHL. Yeah. Because the NHL got too big, got too they thought that they could do everything that the big boys did, and they're finding out very quickly that nobody is watching their product. Go ahead.
And a lot of that was ownership being like, "Oh no, we're not gonna." And I get those TV deals can be a little one-sided, but like the fans have got to be able to see the team.
Yep.
Like, you've made it almost unaffordable for them to get to the stadium. You got to make it so that they can watch the games. Otherwise, they'll either find a way to illegally watch it or just tune out altogether. So yep. Say what you will about the NFL, but like, for the most part, if you want to watch, maybe you can't watch the team you want to watch, but if you want to watch football, you can watch football.
Yep.
So,
and if you don't want to pay for it, there are ways.
Yeah.
There are ways.
If it's just a matter of like paying for a Peacock subscription, yeah. Like Peacock's it's not that expensive.
No. So. And you'd only have to pay for it 3 months out of the year. And you get Sunday night football. You get Sunday and Thursday night football. I mean, like, occasionally, I'm sorry. Yeah, because Amazon has Thursday night football for the most part.
The other thing is, you know, there's just major. And I get there's a lot of games, so it's a little bit different.
Yeah.
But they've got to figure something out. I did like the Braves going to their own
network.
Yeah. A lot of people didn't like it because you have to be in market.
Yeah.
To subscribe to, which I mean, I get, but like, there's also other ways around that, you know?
Yep.
You can get a VPN.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know. It's kind of ridiculous that so many people are like the players. And like, I mean, if you had the ability, like if your job was like, hey, look, you got to sign a contract with us and we're going to pay you $1 million every year for the next 30 years. What are you going to say?
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to say no.
Yeah. That's the thing.
So like, how do you blame the players? Anyway, but we still have this season. We'll see what happens next season. The end of the season promises to be pretty interesting, and we have football season coming, which is not going to be exciting for the Falcons, but, you know, it just means I don't really have to care this year, and maybe they'll surprise me, because the quarterback room and the Falcons organization is getting to be like Cleveland Browns level of fucking stupid.
Yeah. And,
at this point, I'm just like, can we trade everybody for Shadur Sanders? Like,
seriously,
just see what he can do. Let him start. Cause at least he's healthy, man. Why the fuck do we have three starting quarterbacks and none of them are healthy?
So. But oddly enough, all of the coaches and all of the support staff name him the worst quarterback. Like, I don't get it. Like,
it's probably a lot of like actual like baggage, you know, his attitude, but I don't, part of that is having a good coach, you know? Yep. I mean, you gotta find, like, see the potential and know how to get through to that person. And maybe it's more difficult with Deion Sanders' son. Wouldn't argue that. It probably is more difficult, but I don't know.
But when you're okay. So when your coach is Todd Monken.
Yeah.
This fucking idiot. Like, Like, I that's the one thing I hate about the NFL is it's just a string of incompetent white dudes. Like,
and they just shuffle position every other year, man. It's so fucking frustrating to watch that. Like, oh, okay, we're going to get our head coach from this organization with the failed head coach. Or then you have, like, these defensive and offensive coordinators that get on a good team for, like, two seasons and become coaches. Yeah. Hey, Kyle Shanahan. Yeah. and it's like, okay, but what have you done with that organization? To the point, and, like, I won't say that the closeness or the proximity of the training facility to that electric whatever thing doesn't cause problems, but like that's become such a thing that everybody points to that it's just like, okay, but your coach is still doing dumb shit, man. Like, he's been there for how long now, and you've gotten nowhere with him.
But I mean, here's the thing: is that when your coaching staff is running practice, and literally every one of your stars, except for Brick Purdy or Brock Pretty or whatever the fuck his idiot name is, I hate him. You know I do. I can't stand his ass. They all thought he was going to be the great white hope, and he wasn't, and I fucking laughed, and I continue to laugh.
How many times have we had that story in San Francisco since Steve Young left?
I know.
So many times.
It's so just many
like,
times.
Oh, this is the next great quarterback for San Francisco, and it's like, no, it's not. No, it's not.
but if your support staff cannot keep your players healthy and they keep on getting injured at practice, Logan, like it's not like they're getting injured in like team versus team practice. They are doing inside practice. They're not even at that point yet. Meanwhile, like, you know, across, like, you know, 500 miles like south, you've got, like, you know, Sean McVay and his staff who, like, I've never told you this, but their training facility is literally, like 4 miles away from me. Like,
oh,
I
that's
can,
awesome.
Yeah, not even that. I think it's, like, 2 miles. I think that me and my wife...
Sure, I would probably be over there all the time.
Like literally are practicing Aaron Donald for a comeback, and already like the news media are like, well, he's not going to be, cause he had 2 years of rest. He's not going to be great. Even if he's 75% of the Aaron Donald we saw before, along with Myles Garrett, you are going to talking about trouble, but you know what? Let's go ahead and downgrade the Rams, but talk up the Niners, even though and all you're talking about is injuries. Like, yeah. I love it. I love the fact that
the NFL is going to do what the NFL is going to do. And I watch it. There's going to be, it's going to be the team we don't expect. Maybe exactly. They don't win at all, but like it, there's always that team that's like, what the hell's going on here?
Yep.
So, you know, or who knows? Maybe it's actually is the Lions' year this year. I doubt it. But,
doubt it. No, that is not going to be. We already know. We already know that. Like that. Unfortunately, Dan Snyder, like the guy is so like. You know what? I finally figured it out. It's that he is so hyped during games, and he's thinking like a player that he makes dumb mistakes. Like his brain goes mush mouth or goes mushy like a player. Like, I need to kill him. And he does stupid stuff. Which,
well, I mean, he was a player. And that's kind of the way he played football.
Exactly. Because he was a defensive lineman, like most defensive linemen do. But it's that, and that's what kills him. And that's what kills them every single time. Because Run risk all the time, right? Like, that's their thing is, like, run the gambit. Fourth quarter downs or fourth downs, right? Go on fourth. But then come playoffs where you need to be smart, it don't work. It's like this weird thing where, like, the announcers start talking about it and it's not even like they're bringing it into the ether. They're like, okay, well, here comes Dan Snyder. And what happens? Yeah. Dan Snyder does Dan Snyder things. So anyways, it's going to be interesting. Yeah. I mean, you know, it'll probably invariably be like a team like the Seahawks. Who knows? Maybe it's my team, Green Bay's year. I doubt it.
Maybe they can finally congeal into like a solid team.
Yeah. Stay goddamn healthy. And not have people get injured all the damn time. But anyways, Adam and Logan's Football Corner will be back this year, as you already know, so just get used to it. You guys can fast forward through it if you want to.
my love to talk football kind of waxes and wanes with how well the Falcons are doing. So, you know, hopefully it's a healthier year for people, because like last year it seemed like every other team was just riddled with injuries. So
yeah.
Kind of lessens the like good, like I could do with less Mahomes and Chiefs talk, but like that's still, they can be an exciting team to watch and weren't so much last year because they just injuries.
Well, whether you love them or hate them, because that became like, they are one of the more dynamic teams in the NFL, right? So like when they're better, it's all around a better league, because people that hate them can hate them and they're the true villains.
Yeah.
And the people that love them, the bandwagoners, the New England Patriot fans of the NFL can, or the Yankee fans, as I like to call them, because, you know, as soon as the Yankees start winning, everybody becomes a Yankee fan. Like, you know, any New York team, right? Oh God, I can't stand it. Anyways. You're right. Like, I mean, with the, like, and then their loudest cheerleader, Chris Collinsworth, of course, you know, I think that's half the reason why people hate them, is if Collinsworth just shut up about them.
Yeah. Like, it's like, they're not even playing. And you will not stop talking about fucking.
Mm-hmm. Will not stop talking about them. But we will see. It's going to be interesting this year to see how things roll out, like you said, especially because the Chiefs are going to be a healthy team. And so, Seahawks were like, I feel like an aberration because, you know, Sam Darnold is not like, I still cannot believe that. I still cannot believe Sam Darnold is a Super Bowl winning quarterback before they're like Matt Ryan will never be a Super Bowl winning quarterback, and he deserved it way more than Sam Darnold. You guys will.
Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl, so
yeah, that's true. I mean, what's his name from the Rams won a Super Bowl? What's that goddamn guy's name? The guy that Zachary Levi played.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
fucking idiot. Fucking Corolla living motherfucker.
Yeah. I like him, though. He was fun to watch.
Kurt Warner. Yeah.
Yeah. He was fun to watch.
I just got tired of hearing his story.
It was like, here's a guy who used to play ball in Canada. Like, okay.
Great.
We know.
Thank you. Thank you.
He was an Arena League quarterback, and now he's winning games, and we know the story. Thanks. We have to hear it every week. All right, let's talk about what we've been watching. Let's see, on the movie front, I went and saw, like, I think I mentioned this last week, but we also watched Super Troopers 2, which I had never seen, weirdly enough, because I really do enjoy those guys and their antics. And then we went and saw Super Troopers 3, which it's one of those things, like, if you like those movies, you will like Super Troopers 3. And if you don't like those movies, you're not going to like Super Troopers 3. They're all back.
Including Brian Cox.
Yes, whose one stipulation for coming back was that he would not film at night.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really, really funny. He's like, but he actually gets so in the universe of the movie. Like he's been like the chief for both the first two movies. And in this one he's retired. And so he really does just get to show up in button scenes, and it works. I mean, that's kind of what he did in the first two movies, but in this one, he has no other responsibility. So he is really funny in this.
I do have to ask. Okay. Like, I just want to ask, like, before we begin the third one, I have to ask, how much did you love what they did to Fred Savage in part two? Like, since you had never seen, you know,
it's pretty funny. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why I never saw the second one. I think Slammin' Salmon. I don't think I've seen that either. I think I've seen every other movie they've done, and like them to varying degrees. But yeah, for some reason I never watched Super Troopers 2, and I got a real kick out of the whole, like, Rob Lowe as the Canadian mayor dude or
Guy
whatever.
Guy LaFranc, like, or something? Like, yeah. Guy LaFrance, or I can't remember what his name was.
It's so ridiculous. And the Canadian Mounties, like Will Sasso, was really funny. And this kind of, I don't know. I think I liked it more than the second one. Nothing's as good as the first one, mostly because the first one is like an intro to all the like goofiness that they bring, and two and three kind of just are, it's just the same jokes. Like, they're not doing anything truly, truly different, just making the same jokes. So it's one of those things of like, if you like that, yes, it's still a little funny. But if the first one grated on you, you're going to be like, oh, God, enough with the meow. So
also, part two has like in Blink and You Miss It, Paul Walter Hauser before he was famous. Yes. I mean, like, literally, like, I mean, it was right when he was becoming famous, right when he was doing Richard Speck and the Black Klansman. But he's also great in that one. Like, I know that, like, it's just, it's a weird movie, Super Troopers 2, because it's not a good movie, but it's a movie that I have an affection for. Like, the music is by the Eagles of Death Metal. I love that band. I love all the cameos in it. Like, to your point, like, with the Rob Lowe of it all, like, they give them funny stuff to do. It's just not a whole movie. Like, and that was my question too.
Yeah, it's very skit. Like, and this one is kind of more the same. They bring a few new people in to play. Probably the biggest name of the bunch is Chase Crawford.
Okay.
Who gets to be something other than, Low Rent Aquaman that we've kind of watched him do forever. And it was kind of nice because you forget that the dude is something other than that, that he actually is an actor, you know, not just this like skeezy kiss ass. And it's funny. I can't remember the guy who plays opposite him, but they play these brothers who at one point in time apparently kept having run-ins with the troopers because they were selling marijuana. And basically, they're the Duke Boys.
Yes.
But they instead of having, because it's in Vermont, instead of riding around in a car with the rebel flag on the top of it, they're riding around in like a Mustang with the American flag on top of it.
Oh, and that's great.
Which is like this double joke because, like, if you know the Broken Lizard guys, they did the movie,
the Dukes of Hazzard movie. Yeah.
And Jay Chandrasekhar directed it. And I mean, that movie's okay. It's not great, but they all show up in it in some form or fashion. And so it was kind of like, oh, that's a funny little, like, what if we have some redneck northern guys? And they even do the thing where they're like, jump a ravine in the car.
Oh, okay.
And instead of, like I said, instead of the rebel flag, it's the American flag on top of the car. It was kind of cute. It's funny. Like, if you like this stuff, it's really funny. I mean, it's obviously not, like, I think you said last week, like, I kind of hoped it would go to streaming. It is, like, in 3 weeks, it'll be on streaming. So.
Oh, okay.
You know, I wouldn't rush out to see it, but it is fun. So. Okay.
I mean, you know, like, I'm always rooting for Broken Lizard and all of their stuff. Like, I think I've said this before, but, like, you really need to check out Tacoma FD. Like, especially.
Oh,
I
loved Tacoma FD.
Oh, okay. You find, like, okay. You got around to. Okay.
Yeah.
My buddy produced Tacoma FD. So, like, I'm always, like, I was brought in early because he was telling me about it and stuff, and I was like, oh man, I love Super Troopers. And he was like, yeah, it's just basically Super Troopers. So yeah. The fire department, less toxic. Yeah. Less like, you know, it's like, it's a more toxic Brooklyn 99, basically.
Yeah, basically.
You know, but it's like, you know, fire department, but set in like Washington. Which it's hilarious. I do love that show. But okay. That is, again, like, I'm looking forward to it. Now, I do have to ask, because we did talk about it, and then it was also something we talked about during, text message. Did you go see the ice cream man?
So Steph and I had talked about it, and that was on the docket for this weekend. Mm-hmm. And so weirdly enough, like, the ultimate deciding factor was not that, like, it came out that he was using generative AI mm-hmm. in the movie. It was, and I told her, you and I talked about it. I was like, yeah, Adam said he's not going to see it because of the AI thing. And I said, but we can still go see it if you're interested. And, like, we were talking about it, and I showed her the story where, like, so there's an animated sequence in the movie. And yes. A few months ago, he had said that he animated the sequence. Like, he went in and animated it. And then yep. I guess there was a screening or something, and somebody noticed an AI credit in the movie, like, credited with part of the animation or something, I guess.
Yep.
And he had to come clean and say that they used generative AI for the animated sequence, and that basically he had lied about it. And ultimately, that was the thing. Like, you don't have the stones to be like, hey, this was what we had to do to finish this movie. We used generative AI. It was a tool. Like, we've seen people argue kind of, I don't want to say for AI, but, like, hey, it can be used in a manner that isn't super shitty. What is troublesome is when you fucking lie about it. Like
that, yeah.
That's problematic, man, because you just don't have the balls to admit what you're doing, because you're like, oh, there's all this backlash, so it might affect me, so I'm just going to lie about it. I mean, it's literally a scene from the studio.
Yeah.
Like, this exact thing happened in the studio. And, like, you didn't learn anything, Eli Roth? Did you watch that show? You should watch that show.
It just, like, he's always kind of given me the ick, as the kids say. But this whole press tour and how he's talked and how he's had to backtrack and he's lied, and it's like, dude, just stop. You're not the Tarantino of horror. Like, you had two good movies, and I've been trying to root for you, but you make it goddamn hard to root for.
I mean, yeah, this makes it really freaking difficult, because you're lying, man.
Like, you're lying. You're literally lying to our faces.
At least, And it, again, if you just never said anything and it was like, oh yeah, we did, we had to use, that's fine. But you seem to make a point of being like, oh no, I animated this. And then it's like, oh yeah, you animated it using generative AI. Like, I could fucking do that, man.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, so ultimately, it became a no. We're not going to go see it. So we are going to spend, instead of going to see that, we're going to basically spend the weekend indoors, or just hanging around the apartment. And she's seen 65. I've never seen 65. We're going to watch that. And we're going to, there's another, I can't remember the name of it. I think it's on Netflix. There's another like dinosaur type movie on Netflix.
Yeah.
And I cannot remember the fucking name of it. Anyway, we're going to watch those two movies because, next week, we're watching The End of Oak Street. So
yes,
I'm really excited for that.
We are too. So like, I'm very excited for that one. Anne Hathaway, the
fucking goat of the year, man. Yeah. Like,
her and Pattinson.
Her, Pattinson, Tom Holland, Zendaya, like, they seem to be just everywhere this year. But yeah, it's I wish the trailer for that movie had just been that first trailer and you never knew anything else. But still, it looks really, really fun. I'm excited for that. So anyway. So you did watch something on Netflix you were telling me about, though.
Yeah, speaking about, like, the house in Oak Street, there was a movie that just came out, whatchamacallit, on Netflix called Last House, directed by Louis Leterry, starring Wagner Moura and Greta Lee, and with a screenplay by Matthew Robbins, who, when he wasn't writing for Guillermo del Toro or helping Guillermo del Toro out making movies, he was the writer director of Batteries Not Included, one of my favorite forgotten 80s movies, and they made this movie that, I mean, as much as I love them, those two actors, man, this movie is objectively just not a good movie. Like, it's basically, the concept is, and it starts off with a good concept, but it's like one of those movies where the plot is terribly executed within the movie. And it just, like, it makes some really hard, terrible decisions. So basically, it's about this this family, you know, led by Wagner Moura, who is, like, you know, gotten an Oscar nomination for The Station Agent, and Greta Lee, who, you know, also Academy Award nominated actress for Past Lives. Like them both. I actually love them both. He was in Narcos. She was in After Party, the mystery show that we both really liked. And they play a husband and wife that, after a rain starts in Seattle, get locked in their home and, like, you know, in this neighborhood, and, like, literally cannot get out because of, you know, my favorite thing was, I was like, this is Chubby Rain. like, if you guys know that reference, they literally get locked in by rain, like possessed rain. Like, that's the only explanation. And basically, this couple have, and their kids have to survive for months and years, not knowing what it is, but kind of knowing that it's something having to do with water. And it ends up being like sea creatures that are alien. It's very kind of like Lovecraftian, but like, this movie features dog killing to like eat the dog. It features like the most random like sea creature of all time. It's just dumb. It's just like, I'm gonna tell you, like, it's not like one of those fun movies where like I said, like the Last House on Oak Street is like kind of looks like it's a fun kind of like mashup of a lot of themes, right? Like J.J. Yeah. Abrams producing this movie seemed to have done right by people this time. This is like the exact opposite. This is like dour, serious, like we're going to track the time that we're in and it goes from months to weeks to literally years. They literally are locked in their house for years. And like they make a farm inside of their house because they can't open doors, but the chimney is not blocked by the chubby rain. And you can still open up the underneath, right? Like your floorboards and find dirt there. So like all of these like weird inconsistencies to get the movie to move forward in the way that they want it to. And it just like, it's just an unpleasant experience. As soon as they shot the dog, I knew like, and there's no spoilers here. Like you can tell because he's a good old boy, like not a good old boy, but like he's a good boy that happens to be very old. At the beginning, like, oh man, they're gonna, like, the dog's gonna go. But then, like, it's not even the way that you think it is. It's like, the father kills the dog with a gun. But then that's supposed to be, like, this whole unlocking of, like, even though these sea creature aliens have kept them and killed basically everybody and turned this fucking place into Water World. Like, literally, it's like a prequel to Water World. That like he's gonna kill one of them to open up the door, and then all of a sudden it flashes to him killing the dog and all of this other violence, and he lets the sea creature go, and the sea creature's like, oh, you know what? Even though we've contained these people and murdered their like most of the civilization, let's just let them go and let them go away. They've learned their lesson. Like, it's fucking wild, dude. Like, this movie makes no sense whatsoever. It's a terrible movie. Like it's got great performances. Like, Greta Lee and Wagner Moura are like acting their asses off. I hope that they got paid very, very well for this movie. I mean, both of them are not gonna not be in movies after this. Like, they're both. Like, if Greta Lee can survive Tron Ares, she can survive anything. Wagner Moura, like, that dude played what's his name that everybody has played now?
I don't know.
Oh God, what is his name in the drug dealer, the big drug dealer, Pablo Escobar. He's like literally 19,000 people have played Pablo Escobar, but like, and he was like the 18th one, but like he managed to be the best like Pablo Escobar of all time. Like, if you've never seen Narcos, actually, I would actually strongly suggest watching it because
it's been on my like I should watch this list for a very long time.
It's like Breaking Bad level good. Like, Boyd Holbrook is it. Like, I know that you know he's our boy. Like, he's like one of the guys that we really love, and he has a great like him and of course
Joe Pedro's in it.
Both like. Get like all three of them get really meaty roles. I've never watched the Mexico version of this one that has what's his name from why am I forgetting everybody's name now? From Andor.
Oh yeah, they played Cassian Andor.
Played Andor. Yeah. He's into playing the main drug dealer, but it's set in Mexico. But I've never seen that one. But the original Narcos, like, that's great. But yeah, Wagner Moura is going to do great things. I like, the sooner people forget this one, the better. It's just an objectively just not a good movie. Like, just not a good movie in any way, shape, or form. It's kind of an insipid movie because you don't kill dogs. There's a lot of things you do, but you don't kill the dog. You don't have your main character kill the dog.
I mean, Nolan did, but at least it wasn't Matt Damon. Matt Damon saved a dog. So
yeah. No, I mean, yeah, exactly. And the dog passes away. Like, you know, that's one of the most famous dogs of all time, right? Argus is one of the most famous dogs of all time. this is just no, like I know there's a dog in at the end of Oak Street, or like last house in the, what I can't remember because this movie in
the end of Oak Street, yeah,
the end of Oak Street has a dog in it. Like, he's gonna be fine. We already know he is. It's gonna be an ID4 situation. Like, it's fine. And even if he doesn't, I mean, you know, shepherd dogs are kind of like, Australian shepherds are kind of assholes. I'm just kidding, guys. But anywho, yeah, like, this one is a hard pass for anybody. Don't watch this one. It's just not a good movie. So anywho, I was disappointed because I was actually looking forward to it because it's post-apocalyptic and it's like water world and shit. And that, like, I mean, you know, me and Ryan, we both loved water world. Probably like the three people in the world that loved, two of the three people that loved water world. But anywho, so yeah. What did you watch? Did you watch anything else?
So yeah, my, two of my favorite animated series of all time, came back in the last 2 weeks. So I binged the new season of King of the Hill. It's fantastic, as always.
Yeah, we watched that too. Like, that was something that we watched over a couple of days.
The Hank Gets Scammed episode was fucking, like, peak King of the Hill.
That and the car. The car might have been one of my favorite things. Or what's his name? Bill getting simped by Jesus, by Chen. You know, also, like, when are we, like, I know that King of the Hill is a, like, you know, it's a show that, like, much like, so, like, much like Silicon Valley, it has terrible people in it. Bobby's best friend, what's his name? God, I can't think of his name now.
You're talking about Dale's son?
Yeah. No, not Dale's son.
Are you talking about Chang Masanasong?
Yeah, Chang. I really fucking hate Chang. I hate him
they went to his dad, and his dad was just like, yeah, you know nothing. Listen to this kid. Bobby, you take over the restaurant. Chang was always, like, the Wasana songs. Like, if you go back and watch OG King of the Hill, the Wasana songs were always who Connie's parents, that's who they wanted to be, who they wanted to impress. Like, there's a really great episode in the original run where they try to join a country club, and the Wasana songs are trying to get them in, and might be the same episode where Connie just wants to play bluegrass. I can't remember. Anyway.
Oh, I thought those were two separate, but that would make sense.
It probably is two separate episodes.
No. But I think you're right, because I think that, like, that becomes an issue for the country club because she's playing bluegrass. I cannot remember for the life of me.
Yeah, like, I need to go back and rewatch. It's been a while since I did a rewatch of
the 13 episodes, the 13 seasons, and 150 episodes.
It's rare that these revival series are even remotely as good as the originals.
Yeah, and
while, like, it's a little difficult because so much of the original cast has passed away now, it still does a really, really good job of invoking that and also moving the characters forward. It's rare, and it's good. I wish they didn't drop them all at once. I honestly wish it was a week-to-week thing, so that
me too.
I felt like I could spend more time. I know I can watch it just week to week, but, you know, it's one of those things where you start watching it, and then before you know it, you've watched four episodes. So,
Like, that's where we're trying to, like, we try to exercise a little self-restraint, and, like, we watch it over a week. like we'll watch two episodes or one episode. We'll do it like as the like what we like to call a palate cleanser. Like if we're watching something heavy, we'll watch something. We'll watch something lighter, and the lighter was for a while was the was King of the Hill, like this season of the King of the Hill, and I'm glad that it's coming back. Like like you're right. Like this is one of the like I slowly started to watch the Futurama stuff, and it's
so it's that's okay. The other one that's back now. Futurama does get a slow roll, which is kind of weird to me that Futurama does and. Yeah. King of the Hill does not, but you know, it's whatever. So Futurama also back for its 14th season. And I was up and down on the last season. The revival seasons before that, I was very down on most of it. I think season 13 was a step up from that. Yeah. And so far, I think season 14 is a step up from even that. It's weird because they're also kind of treading similar story ground as King of the Hill. Like episode 2 of this season of Futurama is called Catfish Hunter, and it's about basically everybody gets catfished. So it's very similar to the scam episode of King of the Hill. So, I thought that was pretty funny. There've only been 2 episodes, I think, so far. And so the first episode's called Beef, and it's all about apparently Fry was a hot dog eating champion but he never got to fulfill his dream of winning the championship in Coney Island. And so Beef is extinct, and so therefore hot dogs don't exist. So it's this whole thing about them cloning cows. It's Jurassic Park except with cows.
So that's hilarious.
It's not as great as like classic Futurama, but it is more in that vein. And so I'm enjoying this season. So again, we're only 2 episodes in, but I'm enjoying this season a lot more than I did the last few seasons, I think.
Okay. So. Like I was starting the last season because I saw that the newest season, and it's okay. Like your complaints were very much for me heard. Like it was like, "Oh no. This is not good. This is not good whatsoever." Like, but I'm only like 3 or 4 episodes in. So I know that you said it does get a little bit better. So like I'm okay, but like I don't know, like I think it's weird because like I'll say that like I think that the original Fox, like the original 4 or 5 seasons of Fox's like Futurama are probably the best animated series run, like that even better than anything that Simpsons had to offer. Like it was just smarter written, like and it was more my jam because it was sci-fi, right? Yeah. But everything after that has been trying to chase the perfection rather than do its own thing like King of the Hill does. Like King of the Hill, like I, like we know about that whole thing of like, you know, they started and then they kind of stopped and then they started. But I mean, essentially it was the same show it was like since the beginning.
Yeah.
This one picks up and it doesn't try to chase that high of the old one.
No, it moves the characters. It's interesting in that it's sitcom-y, but it's also like forward thinking. The new King of the Hill, whereas like Futurama is very much trying to, like you said, recapture the glory days of Futurama. But I mean, nothing will ever top those 5 seasons.
Like, no, really not.
In ending with the Devil's Hands, like it's one of, if it's probably not the highest rated episode of Futurama, that's probably Jurassic Bark.
Yeah.
Which is so tough to watch. But, I mean, it's pretty freaking high up there. It's one of the best episodes of the show. And, you know, it's never going to be that good. And I guess maybe, you know, coming to that, you know, not conclusion, but like just accepting that it's never going to be that good is really kind of key to being able to enjoy it. But the fact that it's at least getting close to that helps, because like from the season 6, quote unquote, which is just the movie Bender's Big Score, they did those 3 direct to video movies that got broken up into season 6, 7, and 8, and then they came back, or it might have been 4 movies, so it might be 6, 7, 8, and 9. But yeah, it's not been a good ride for Futurama for a while. So, but yeah, this season has been pretty good. Pretty good.
Okay.
So
I'll get, like I said, like I saw it was coming back. I was like, you know, this is my favorite, like this is my favorite, like, you know, animated series. Other than Cowboy Bebop, this is my favorite animated series of all time. I should give it another chance, because like that first episode was so bad of the new season of that last season. I was just like, nope, I'm done. I don't need to watch this anymore. But anyways, I'm glad to hear that there is some hope. So I will give it a try and report back. Anything else that you're watching?
I don't think so. Not that I, you know, nothing that I haven't, like we're still watching, My Adventures with Superman, which more people should watch. Fuck, that show is so good. Walking Dead, Dead City is back. And I did watch the premiere. I haven't got a chance to watch the second episode, but I mean, really, there's nothing to say about this franchise. Oh, you know what we did watch that you might like if you haven't seen it? We hadn't got around to watching the rest of it, but we watched the first episode of Westies.
I've heard of this. Good or like potential?
It has a lot of potential. I mean, mostly because who doesn't love J.K. Simmons?
Yeah.
And so J.K. Simmons as the leader of like a gang, essentially a mob, the mafia in old New York. Like it's set in the '80s. So I say old, but you know, it's basically true to life to the '80s. Like the characters they're playing either existed or there were versions of these people that existed. So it's kind of like watching Goodfellas, where it's like, oh, this is the way it was, but maybe not like word for word. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Simmons is fun, vicious, just absolutely fucking ruthless. There's several moments in the pilot where it's just like, you know, out of nowhere, just shooting a guy, you know, it's like, and then he's just like, yeah, somebody clean that up. It's on MGM Plus. So you got to do some legwork to kind of to watch it, unfortunately. But I think it definitely has potential. I know it's like kind of mixed reviews. So maybe it takes a big downturn, but I enjoyed the first episode.
So. Gotcha. And Titus Welliver's in it, right?
Yes. It's so funny because he's playing kind of I don't want to say a stooge, but a lackey sort of.
Okay.
And it's, yeah, I'm just not used to seeing Titus Welliver not be
Titus Welliver.
Yeah, yeah, kind of, you know, king shit, you know, yeah, like don't fuck with that guy. And he's kind of under J.K. Simmons' thumb in the show.
Gotcha.
And so that's a little interesting. The cast is pretty freaking good.
The guy who created it, Chris Brancato, he also did some of Narcos, and he also did one of my favorite 90s movies that nobody actually talks about, which is he also did Narcos. Hoodlum, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Yeah. So interesting. I will, if it comes to Amazon, because some of these MGM Plus things, if they do very well, they end up coming to Amazon. Or if they're not doing so well, they come to Amazon to kind of help them out. So I will definitely keep my eyes out. Interesting enough, like I was looking at it, not everything's out yet. So it's like a week-to-week schedule on MGM Plus?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there's 4 or 5 episodes up. So.
Okay. Okay. Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I will definitely like think about it. Speak about crime. We actually started Your Friends and Neighbors.
Is it good?
The Juan Jamon show. Yeah. So I've sat here the entire time watching this show going, fucking rich white people. And that's what it is. It's like a show where like you have no empathy towards any of these pieces of shit because they are literally like at a certain point. Okay, to give you an example, at a certain point, John Hamm his character is having a conversation with another guy at a party, like at a birthday party for this guy's wife. And he's like, yeah, like, you know, he's like, well, I just lost my job. So I don't think I'm going to be able to do those chairs at your charity dinner. And the guy looks so disappointed. And because of fucking Juan Jamon's ego, he goes, okay, well, you can put me down for this, not the entire table, but two chairs. You know how much those chairs cost for this fucking benefit gala? $30,000. Like, do you know what $30,000, like, and I thought to myself, I was like, do you know what $30,000 could do for me in my life? Like, just giving $30,000 to me. Like, and I was like, and this is why we are in the state we are in right now. And it just kind of like, it's a very well-made show, but it is a show where you're like, if a serial killer started showing up and started going stab, 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 you would not have any sympathy for these people because they're shitty human beings. Like he's playing Don Draper 2.0 finance bro. And the only thing that makes him likable is that he is stealing from all of these rich assholes that he's supposedly friends with.
So the one thing about the show that, this is a little backhanded, but maybe the only thing I'm truly, truly interested in regards to the show is if it's well written, because like I know a little bit of Jonathan Tropper's work and it's been like, the few things I've seen, I haven't loved, but I haven't hated. And this is the guy who wrote Star Wars Starfighter for Sean Levy.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I just wanted to be like, is he a good writer? So that's something, you know, like, oh, okay. Well, maybe this will be a good Star Wars movie.
So whether he can write a good Star Wars movie remains to be seen, because it is a well-written show, but there is zero empathy for anybody. And I cannot tell because we're literally six episodes into a 10 episode season. And the thing that bothers, like, so, like, I like, okay, so, like, the thing that he deals with that I feel like maybe it's, like, his thing, but I don't know, is he deals with unlikable characters. Like, because, like, Lucky is a show filled with a bunch of unlikable idiots or assholes. And Your Friends and Neighbors is the same thing. Like, it's too much. There's nobody that you can kind of go, oh, well, I have empathy for this person. Like, not even sympathy, but empathy. Like, you cannot see anything, like, other than maybe Juan Jamon stealing from these people in a, oh, man, like, I don't mind this. Like, this is actually kind of fun sort of thing. But, like, his kids are terrible, like, are rich kids that, like, you know, oh, I feel so bad for you. Fuck you. His wife, oh, I feel so bad for you. Shut the fuck up. Really, shut the fuck up. Like, that's literally what I do in my head when every character comes up and they have problems. So, no, like, it, I don't, like, so what it is it continues to be what Apple TV is that, okay, there are people that we, like, there's somebody we know that loves this show, and I'm like, yep, I understand exactly why you like this show, because it's country club lifestyle. Fuck that. I'm not that person. But it speaks to a point where if you're into, like, this show is designed for very specific people. Yeah. Like all Apple shows, like, we're going to talk about another Apple show in a second, that, like, they're all designed to be for very specific people. And if you're that person, that is your fucking show. This is, like, the ultimate version of that show. And Your Friends and Neighbors is like Mad Men, where it's like you hate everybody because they're all rich and white and have white people problems. That don't affect, like, there's no problem in this show that anybody that doesn't make $500,000 or more could relate to. But for those people, this show is like crack. And that's where I am. Like, yeah. I'm waiting to see what happens. Like, there's a through line for something that I'm hoping, if it pays off, then I will continue to watch it. If it doesn't, I'm done this season, no matter how much James Marsden is in the movie or in the show. And that's the thing, is that I think that actors are flocking to this because you get to wear beautiful clothes. You get to be in the Hamptons or, like, upstate New York in beautiful, like, places, because it's filmed on location. But then you also get to do terrible things. And who doesn't love to be an act, like, you know, who doesn't love to, like, perform and be, like, a terrible human being on a show? Yeah. And the answer is nobody. That's why you got the level of actors that you got. So in answer to your question, no. It, like, he probably writes really great Imperial characters, but Tony Gilroy writes great Imperial characters, and we know how you feel about Andor.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And it is Sean Levy, so it will be a little bit more lighthearted.
Yeah, and palpable. Yeah.
Yeah. I've wanted to watch it, but, like, I think I've watched, like, the first 5 or 10 minutes of it 2 or 3 times. And mm-hmm. every time I'm just like, I think I'm okay.
And it's a lot of that. Like, you will be very much like that the entire time.
That's unfortunate. All right. So on to more stuff we've definitely both watched. X-Men, the animated series, about to wrap up its second season with the promise from, the head of, not Kevin Feige, but I guess the producer or whatever, that the wait for season 3 is not going to be 2 years, that it will be out next year. We just got episode 8. Spoilers for X-Men 97. Gambit finally has returned after the promise at the end of season 1 and a lot of, like, hand-wringing for season two, which has been mostly great. Like, I've really, really enjoyed this season.
Yeah. It's like there, like you said, there's a lot of hand-wringing this season, and that's
kind of what the X-Men do, though.
Yeah, that's true. It very much feels like, do you remember when, like speaking of another series, X-Files, how, like, X-Files would, like, when you, I don't know about you, when I was a kid, I just wanted the mythology episodes. I didn't give a shit about the single episodes, even though now rewatching it, I'm like, man, these single episodes are the best.
The single episodes are actually, I don't want to say the stronger episodes, but, like, they're the ones that you can kind of rewatch because they're the ones that aren't going to completely fall apart because they dropped the fucking ball with the mythology, which, very brief, since we're talking about X-Files, recut version of the movie.
Yep.
Is this thing that is happening?
Like, no, it's happened. It's happened. It's being released.
Yeah. What, like, the next fuck? Week.
The R-rated, the original, well, okay, so it's not even being recut, it's being restored. It's basically, like, you know the story, right? Like, how Chris Carter made this movie. It was a hard R movie. It was a horror movie. Like, he wanted to do, like, he wanted to bring it back to the one-off episodes, right? Like, speaking of that. And Fox at the time were like, no, no, no. And literally took the movie away from him and recut it. And made it, like, more palpable.
Everybody hated it, though.
Yep. Like, oh, that was a terrible movie.
And now we have the like, insanely titled X-Files, I Want to Believe, Frankenstein.
What, Frankenstein.
Yeah, something.
Yeah.
And it's going to be streaming, I guess, next week. So,
yep.
We may watch it. It's been so long since I watched anything X-Files. Anyway, like that was in the news this past week, and I was like, "What?" So yeah, like I'm to your point of like, yeah, the mythology. I'm with you. Like, I do want to see those episodes, but it kind of does tend to be like the one-off. More so one-off kind of exciting things that really
hold up. Well, yeah, and it's also because like when I did my rewatch back during COVID, and as soon as Mulder leaves, I turn it off. Like, it just becomes this like failed like experiment, right? Because Robert Patrick was not very good. As much as I love Robert Patrick, but the thing that I noticed was, every single time there was a classic one-off episode, who wrote it? Vince Gillian. So, yeah. I mean, like it does make sense because he was never a part of the him, Chris Morgan, all those guys never, like, it was always Chris Carter that wrote the mythology episodes, which I always find funny. Like, it's like, now that I'm older, I'm like, no, give me the one-off episodes. Give me Earl Meyer's Flask or Homecoming or whatever the one is with the pig farm.
It's more fun. Yeah.
Yeah. They're a lot more fun. And to your point though, X-Men is a little bit different where it's like
it's almost all mythology because we only have 8-9 episodes.
Yes.
Like 10 episodes for only 9 episodes in this season, which is strange. I don't understand. Like, did something get cut short?
I think that it was, I think what took 2 years, and I don't know for a fact, but it was the, like, let's go ahead and cut out everything we can from the Bo DeMeo of it all. And then like arbitration, like I guarantee you, we're going to probably hear something about WGA arbitration rights. And they were like, nope. All of this is still Bo DeMeo. So he still gets executive producer credit. He still gets producer credit. And he still gets co-writing. Because all of the episodes I was reading about it, all of the episodes have new writers on them. Not like Bo DeMeo's writers. Like the writer's room. It's brand new writers. And the thing is that this season has been good, but I will tell you, like, I'm fairly certain.
I think season one was a lot stronger.
Oh, yeah, much stronger. And I guarantee you that if Bo DeMeo had just been allowed to do whatever he was going to do, that we would have had a stronger follow through. Because this, every time there's a divergent, like a side story, it feels so random. And Sometimes some of the stuff, it's like, why are you doing this? Like, what are you doing? Why is this happening?
So I think episode 8, Dead Man's Hand, is like a good, it's a great episode, but it's a good, like, point in favor of what you're saying, because it's one of the stronger episodes of the season, but it's also, like, it's built largely on season one, and a lot of stuff in it actually is from the original series. Like, we're watching it, and Stephanie was like, I don't know who any of these people are. I'm like, yep. Well, that's Belladonna, and that's, I can't remember the goddess's name. I was like, she's like the goddess of, like, the Thieves and Assassins Guild or something. I was like, there's a whole episode in the original series that delves into all of this. And this was you find out that character is actually ancient and stole her power from Apocalypse. And, like, it feels like a very Bo DeMeo kind of thing to do. And it makes it one of the, even if you don't know all that stuff, it does make it one of the stronger episodes. Probably the standout of the episode, maybe of the season, is, like, the fact that, yeah, Nightcrawler doesn't get used correctly, because, like, watching him fuck up all the X-Men was just chef's kiss.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Just, like, yeah, man, the dude can teleport in the blink of an eye. He knows, like, how to fight, like, hand-to-hand combat, like, long range. Like, he could just grab you and then teleport you up into the sky and then drop you. And then, like, just watching him demolish the X-Men was like, yes, that's what you do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's a show that I feel like, at its best, understands what it like King of the Hill, going back to the whole thing of King of the Hill. Though I feel like this year it's been, like you said, like it's been a little off, but it's still like a great show, like a truly great show, like an entertaining one that, like, I really do love to watch week in and week out. Like, it is appointment viewing for me. To your point, like, it's interesting that you mentioned, like, you know, old episodes. Like, if I had not done a rewatch when they had posted the X-Men animated series on Disney Plus, there's some times where I would be lost at what they're doing. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. there is so much recall to that series that I'm like, I don't know about, like I have to think about it. Like, I literally have to think about it. Like, sometimes I'm like, okay, so I know that I remember this, but where do I remember this from? You know? And, like, invariably it always comes back to the same thing, right? Like, original animated series, never even comic books, just always the series, which is kind of great. I am very excited for the finale, but I'm also excited that we're going to be getting a TV series. We're going to be getting getting another season of television, and not have to wait, like you said, 2 years.
Yeah. I'm a little bummed that it's only 9 episodes. Hopefully we get a little bit more next season. But it has been just a fun ride. Yes. I love how much Cable is in this show.
like just all of a sudden, like, shows up randomly. You know, but also like the entire, like, well, like also like giving him X-Force, right? Yeah. Like basically forming X-Force, something that you feel like should have been done earlier in the animated series. Yeah. But then again, we were so dealing with, like, I forget that it was also like a response to what we were dealing with in the comics at the time, and what we were dealing with at the comics at the time. And it's so eye rolling now. Was he baby Nathan? And of course he was fucking baby Nathan, but they stretched it out. How, like, was it just me?
It went on for so long.
Was it me, like, that it was 2 years, or did it just feel like 2 years?
No, I think it was longer than that. So in the comics, it was kind of like always. So see, his first appearance is New Mutants 87. Yeah. And that would have been like 80 something.
Would have been 89 or 80.
No, sorry, it's 1990. So New Mutants 87 is March of 1990. I was thinking it was 89, but yeah. So March of 1990, and the reveal that he is Nathan Summers is probably 94, 95.
Jesus. So yeah, we're talking like a long, like the animated series had been on for a while at that point.
Yeah.
Wow. That's wild. Like, that is wild that they kept us like, you know what? Actually, it wasn't even them. It was Wizard that kept us like questioning. I full well believe that Wizard and their stupid columnists and their writers like were paid by Marvel and DC to just like push narratives that they wanted. Because, like, I remember, and I would love to go back to read those original articles, at how hyped they used to make me for those mysteries that were not mysteries at all. They were just stringing them out.
Yeah.
You know? But
I mean, it's that's the X-Men more than maybe anybody. It's,
oh, yeah.
Soap opera shit. So... you know, it's all dependent upon how much you can like buy into all of that stuff.
Yeah, so. all the drama. And you know, for a kid, I mean, you know, for a, you know, at the time I was like, you know, what? I was 12 in 90. So like this was like prime era of like you know, when you get into the serial, like this is your first serialized like storytelling thing, like of course it, like you eat it up like hotcakes, like, you know, this is like like Star Wars on a monthly basis, like but like, so let me go back, let me just ask one more question before we close up, because it is X-Men, like, you know, since we're talking about X-Men, was it just us and like was it just us as kids that this felt like peak comic book, or was it truly peak comic book storytelling?
I mean, I don't know, like, even it's hard for me to look at it objectively,
right? Like I that's why I'm asking you, because like I don't, everything after that, New 52, Civil War, like even the stuff before that, Secret Wars, it all feels like it doesn't feel as good as the X-Men run in the 90s, like everything that they were dealing with in the 90s in X-Men. You know, like we're about to get another, like, you know, like if we're to believe, like, what is it? We're in phase 5 or 6 in Dooms, like
5. No. Yeah. I think we're still in 5.
Okay. Like with, let's just say 5, right? With 5 going into 6 is supposed to be X-Men. So of course they're going to draw from the 90s, right? Like I don't see why they won't, because like that's classic X-Men, right? Like, or, and it's not even really like, I know that they say 60s X-Men is classic X-Men, but it's not, because I don't I don't remember anything from the 60s.
The Claremont Byrne stuff of like their run in the 80s was really what solidified the X-Men as true, like, central characters and gave them their own actual, like, universe. Like, even though they're in the MCU, like, that's what made them, like, it expanded that lore so much. And then, you know, you have the Claremont Lee stuff of the late 80s, early 90s. Yeah. And then Liefeld comes in, takes over New Mutants, launches X-Force. And it just kind of explodes from there. So, yeah, it really is Claremont and Byrne that we owe this version of the X-Men to.
But also, like, we've already done Days of Future Past. We've already done Apocalypse. Like, we've done those things, right? Like, unfortunately, you know, the director persona non grata of that everybody just doesn't want to talk about anymore. We won't name him here. He did all of those. He ran through them so quickly, like almost like he knew he was going to get into trouble after his buddy Kevin Spacey got in trouble. But like, do we see a reboot of that, or do we see more of like I wonder if we see more of X-Men, like, you know, because like the animated series is more like a test run.
Yeah, and they did really, really jump kind of quickly this season into the Morrison X-Men stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't know, which I don't love. I don't hate, but especially X-Corp, I hate the idea of and I do not like those costumes. So that was an edict because they wanted the comics and the movies to be more synergetic, you know, and them to kind of wear costumes like they wear in the movie. So they all had to have fucking black leather costumes. But
did I miss something? Did they make a mention of reference to that? Or did they just all of a sudden show up? Because
they just showed up that way.
Right?
Okay. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, there's some stuff in this season where it feels like we missed some story somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's a little frustrating. But yeah, ultimately though, like, I thought the return of Gambit was done very, very well and felt something akin to like what that first season really, really felt like.
So. Yeah. A surprising wealth of gravitas and emotional resonance. Like, even though it's only been a season, it feels like it was earned.
Yeah.
Like it really does feel earned. I think it's because we haven't, like, I think that the key for me in the show was they belabored it for a little bit, like post Gambit death. But after that, there were so many problems that they didn't belabor the point. They made it a point, but they didn't make it a point. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that that's what worked, is that we got to a point to where just when we were forgetting about him, all of a sudden, oh, yeah, that's right. Forgot about that. And like showed up, and it's kind of like, yeah. But yeah, like, I'm definitely enjoying the hell out of this one.
So before we get to Ted Lasso, we probably should have mentioned this from the jump, like as news, but the piece of interesting news broke this week, I texted it over to you, was that Jim Carrey, who constantly says he's retired, is going to be playing George Jetson in a live action Jetsons movie for Warner Brothers. And so I first of all, definitely feels like Warner is like, as a company, deciding that like this merger probably isn't going to happen, and we're just going to, because they also announced another Matrix movie was in the works. Like, we're just going to move forward with things because like somebody will buy us, but we don't know when the fuck that's going to happen. And we've got to content, you know, like that's what we do.
Yeah.
We make stuff.
Contenting so. Is contenting, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So I also, okay. So I was reading something and I had to go back to the press release. They never said that he's playing George Jetson.
They just said that he'll star in the movie.
Movie. So I'm going to throw something out there that is he playing Spacey Sprocket?
I mean, that would be interesting.
But a miniaturized version of himself, CGI? Because Colin Trevorrow is doing this, and they're doing this whole like live action, but it's not really live action, I guarantee you. If we see somebody else get hired, like, say, like, go with me on this. If we get, it, like, because here's the thing. He's in that bad guy role nowadays, and that would seem like the thing, but also like if you get an announcement that like someone like what's his name? I was thinking of Jesse Plemons. If Jesse Plemons gets announced, gets announced in the cast, I'm like, I almost feel like he would be George Jetson, and you almost want to cast George younger.
Yeah, I mean, you would think so, but
yeah,
like, I don't know. It's such a strange bit of like, and. There's nothing Carrie says that you can take really serious at this point. Cause yeah. And that's not really a bad thing, but like, does he enjoy doing this? Does he want to come back? Like, or does he like, is he in like tax trouble? Not that he said that, but like Sonic 3, he was just like, I bought some stuff. I needed some money.
Yeah.
And it's like, but also he does seem to really enjoy doing it. So,
I mean, here's the thing is that he was paid like $12 million for Sonic 3. Like,
yeah,
like $12 million. Let that sink in for a role that he maybe
he did play two people. So,
yeah, but also like he's only in the movie, maybe 30 minutes of a 2.5 hour movie. I think that Keanu got paid $10 million for.
I didn't tell you. Did I tell you we went and saw him?
No, but I did see it. I did see it on your whatchamacallit, on your Facebook.
Yeah.
I did see that. How was he? Like, was that great or?
Yeah, I mean they're a really good band, but I mean they've been playing together for a long time.
Yeah. Well, like
since
years.
Yeah, I was gonna say since like the Bill and Ted days, right?
Yeah, so 30 or 40 like, years. Jesus yeah. Christ, that's a long time.
Yeah, so it's kind of thing of like if you like the music, then you'll like this. What's fun is that Keanu Reeves he's not the lead of the band. He is the bass player.
Bass player.
And he is a bass player. Like he stands off to the side. And plays it like he didn't take a mic. He doesn't sing on stage.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's very like tries to be unassuming, but he is still Keanu Reeves, infinitely fucking cool. So, yeah, it was really cool to like be, you know, 100 feet from Keanu Reeves.
That's great. Yeah, Darkstar is awesome. Like they are a great band. I've been following them since the 90s, but like they go like it's weird because like sometimes they form together and they make music and sometimes they don't. Sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. It's like it's not a like, you know, a full-time thing. Like I'm actually speaking of Keanu, I'm actually watching his like he's on a reality TV series right now, which is an odd thing to say about Keanu. But it's a motorsport, like a motorcycle, like because he has a motorcycle.
Of course he is.
He has a.
He is Duke Kaboom.
Yes, he is. Like, so he has a racing company, or like a racing racing group, and so like he's on a docuseries called Hooligans, the Arch Racing Project. And basically, it's like a 6-part docuseries where it's been out for about a month, so you can watch it. Like he's a big part of it, like because like he's the he's a sponsor of it, and basically, it's about this racing group, and I don't know, man. Like it's kind of great because, like. You know, like Keanu can sometimes be distant on things when he's doing press, or like, I mean, he's active and he's nice, but he's distant. This is something you can tell he is super passionate about because he's like so engaged in this. Like, it's not like Keanu's on the side and he doesn't want to be on the camera. Like, he's literally in the entire series and you're like, oh shit. Like, this dude is actually doing this. This 62-year-old man is like he wants this to be a thing for people. Definitely worth, like, something I completely, you have to find your ways around downloading it because it's on Samsung TV. I found my ways. You can find your ways too. And I would definitely suggest doing it because it's, like, even though I don't like motorcycles, sport, like that kind of stuff, it was Keanu that keeps you involved in the series. So yeah. Check it out.
Yeah. All right. So finally, Ted Lasso back, season 4, episode 1. Almost everybody is back. We're missing a few like big players from the Richmond coaching side and players. But you know, the main crew minus Beard and Roy Kent shows up in Kansas to convince Ted Lasso to come back and coach the women's team. What did you think of the premiere of Ted Lasso season 4?
Yes. So I found this both weird and charming and very Ted Lasso-y. Like, does that make sense? Like, it's not, I can't tell if it's good, but I can't say objectively it's bad. Like, it's almost like I need a few more episodes to kind of really decide whether or not this whole thing of going to Kansas to get Ted together on the, like, to get him onto the team is a thing that we really, like, that we really needed.
Yeah. I agree with you. So, I as a guy who has had some, I did a Ted Lasso podcast, covered all 3 seasons, love the show, even the shit that people don't like. Like, there's one episode of the show where I'm just like, eh. Weirdly, it's one of your favorite episodes, but it's fine. Beard's not out. I don't love. But I love, unabashedly love the show. And this, I hope it gets better. Not that this is bad. I just hope it gets better because, man, yes. A lot of it felt really kind of forced, and maybe because they were in Kansas, I don't know. Like it just felt weird.
I think forced is the right thing. Like it was almost like it was a dictum from Jason Sudeikis, where he was like, I need us to have an episode in Kansas because isn't he one of the co-owners of the Kansas City Current? Like, yes. He's one of the main primary, like, owners of that. Like, he, I mean, he's from Kansas City. Like, I mean, I was surprised that Paul Rudd didn't cameo. It was very kind of weirdly, like, it felt like a note. Like, in order for me to come back, I'm going to need this, which is so weird because it's so about, it's so meta because it's about getting the, like, even though they've said in very much in, like, I guess they've said that this was already a plan in place before season three had ended, and that they knew that they weren't going to be bringing back much of the male stars of the male cast in recasting it. But they just wanted to make sure that they had to like do like they had to write the thing, but also like it doesn't feel like it fits. Like it's like I said,
yeah,
like, it was charming.
It's an odd duck episode. Like,
yeah,
for the premiere to, it would have almost been better to start without Ted. I know the show's called Ted Lasso, but yeah, to start not on Ted, you know, yeah, and it just, you know, it's so weird and awkward. And I mean, it kind of gets there by the end, but we'll see. They're going to London. We're going to do the Ted Lasso thing. Hopefully it ups its game. Like, hopefully these new characters are really, really compelling. So we know Brendan Hunt is going to be part of it. Of course, yeah. Leslie and or Higgins and Rebecca are going to be part of it. Roy will probably be kind of in and out, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's in the trailer, so we know he's in there. And I think we may get some, like, guest spots from other actors that, you know, from the show's history. But I think largely it's probably going to be a new group of characters that they're introducing. And I don't know. It feels weird. I don't know if even I have the grace to like give it time to develop that. I don't know if the showrunners have the patience, like if they are going to rush into developing these new characters, and it's just going to feel like a weird mishmash, kind of like, you're telling me I'm supposed to like feel certain ways about these characters, and we're just not there yet. You know, like there's a few characters in the first series that immediately you feel a certain way about. Eventually you come around to feeling different, like Jamie Tart. But then there's like characters like Sam who are almost non-existent for most of the first season. Yeah. Like he gets a couple of mentions and like some interactions with like Jamie or Roy, and then he becomes such a central character by the time you get to the third season. And like, I don't know if we as viewers and the show's creators collectively have enough patience to develop something like that in what is really the fourth season of a show. It's almost like that when you bring a new character on late into a sitcom, you know what I mean?
No, it's just like, I do.
I don't care about these people. Like, give me classic Fonzie and Richie stuff. Like, I don't care about these new people.
I'm a little bit more optimistic just because A, this is Ted Lasso, but B, I feel like they're also going to be dealing with that very thing. Because they've already set it up.
Yeah.
Because it's the beginning of a new chapter for Richmond, right? Like, because Richmond is already like Richmond, like they're already like they've already set it up where there's a bunch of critique.
Yeah.
There's a huge critique of Bex and Keeley and Higgins, like, decision to open up a female, even Rebecca says, she's like, you know, this is Keeley's thing. Like, she really wants this. And it's almost like everybody is against this. So like the whole thing of like the whole meta commentary of it all, I feel is like definitely there to be able to play with.
And it's supposed to have been what, 4 years later, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's exactly the same amount of time.
So part of the question, which maybe they'll answer, is like the season three, one of the endings of season three is Keely presenting a proposal for the Lady Greyhounds. It's taken them 4 years to get that off the ground.
Yeah.
That seems a little.
I guarantee you that as they like, I guarantee you it's going to be a very much so a Wrexham kind of thing where they end up getting into the Premier League and everybody's focus changed from like starting the Lady Greyhounds to Richmond going into the Premier League and everything that it takes to do a Premier League. And then them getting relegated out of the Premier League and like, you know, maybe them having a Cinderella season, they win. And then like, we're going to find out. I guarantee you we're going to find out, but I guarantee you it's like, it was done. Like there's always a reason, right? Like, and I feel like that's the whole thing is that now that they've like, you know, that it's subsided and Richmond's resources are not as such where they're all putting towards Premier League, that Keeley's proposal finally went through. Yeah. And even then, I almost wonder if it's half-baked. And Rebecca is not a bad guy, but she's like, I only have so much money to give for this.
Yeah.
And it was a thing of where it's like, finally, okay, fine. I'll give you some money. But it's going to be a group of... Again, like whatchamacallit, just like Richmond at the beginning of Ted Lasso.
Yeah.
Like how they were basically an island of misfit toys. I feel like that's the way that they're going to start. And then everything that I've understood, like I did a little bit of research before this, because I had the kind of the same question. When you start a new football club, you start at the very bottom. Like you're only entitled to so many things and you can only do so much and you have to actually build it up. So they're starting at literally the relative bottom and they have to work their way up. So it is going to be an island of misfits toys, right? But not really. They're going to find the hidden gems like Ted always does, right? Or they're going to be able to unlock the power. But I also feel like, I don't know. We'll find out. But I feel like by the end, we're in a good spot to where I have questions. But what I've learned in the three seasons of Ted Lasso, but also just being like being a fan of like, you know, like we always like we always say, you never doubt Bill Lawrence because he always has a plan. And I mean, he's not the showrunner, but he's the producer of this show. And he would never let a show like Ted Lasso, like one of his flagships, flounder. Especially after Cougar Town. Especially after like Cougar Town and Scrubs and those experiences.
Yeah. And
okay, there's a perfect example. I feel like Scrubs does what you talked about. Been away for a while, come back and finds its footing. Like it takes it a little bit of time, but it finds its footing.
Yeah.
And has legacy characters and new characters. And that's where I'm like, and I may be wrong. That's where I put my faith is Bill Lawrence and that ability to toe that line of like, okay, I knew that I screwed up before, but I've learned my lessons. And so I'm going to find a way to do this for you that will still feel like this is Ted Lasso. This is the world of Ted Lasso, but it's different. I think that's why they started in KC. I wish, like you said, like almost like this episode could have been like episode 7, but as a flashback, like now we get to see why Ted came back.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Like, we'll see. You know, I wonder if we're going to get Trent, like, because we see his byline that Jamie has left the team, which, of course, you know, he was written out. Like, we know this. Come on. Like, yeah. like, you know, he, like, of course, like all things real football and not football, like, of course he's going to do the Beckham thing and go to Spain, right? Like Real Madrid, so that we don't have to deal with him, so that it opens up the romance between Kaylee and, good grief, I can't even think of Brett Goldstein's name.
Roy Kent.
Because it's, ultimately, that's what we want to see, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm waiting to see. I wish that I had gotten new characters already. But, I mean, next week is going to be... I'm wondering if, because we saw something in prison, like, I'm wondering if Beard is in prison for some reason. And he has to get him out.
That would be interesting.
Yeah. Because we don't know anything about those guys other than Jamie. We saw Jamie. We didn't even hear about the team. Because, like I said, like, three ends with them in the Premier League, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't hear anything until, like, we haven't heard anything. Like, they didn't even, like, say anything, like, the newscast was happening. Like, you remember, like, they were doing, like, the BBC News thing or the football news. We didn't hear anything about where Richmond was in the league and how successful or how they just... They're starting a new Lady Greyhounds. Like, I don't even think that they called them the Lady Greyhounds. So, but anywho, I don't know. Like, what would you like to see this season?
I honestly don't know. Like, I don't have a good answer for that.
Okay.
I just want it to not
suck.
Yeah, to not feel like the way most shows feel when you bring them back from the dead. And it's just like, you ended on such a good note, and this feels just half-hearted, you know? I'm glad everybody's working. I'm glad we get a little bit more of this world, but I also want it to be good. And I don't think this first episode was great. In fact, in all of Ted Lasso... So far, I now have a worst episode of Ted Lasso. I think this is the worst episode of the show. That said, the worst episode of Ted Lasso is still better than most other shows. There were some really, if you're a true Ted Lasso fan like me, there's like hardcore. There's some really fun stuff. Like the manager of the store that he works at is Ronnie Fauci, who got brought up a few times, at least once memorably in the original series, as the kid who got tempted you to eat a Butterfinger, and it was not a Butterfinger.
Butterfinger, yes.
Yeah. There's some fun stuff in his room, like the dartboard, the book that his dad does the book report on for him, like that's in the bookshelf on his room. Just some stuff like that. It was nice to see his mom again.
Yes.
That was kind of cool.
And also like to be able to go to the barbecue place he's mentioned like three or four times throughout the series. You know, and like, you know, the callback to the left, like to the leftover, the bags, like the leftover bags that you get. And also like the grease stains, like you're not doing it right unless you're doing it like that. You know, I like character building too. Like, I don't think that this is the worst. It's down there, but also like, I'm going to reserve my right because this is the beginning. And this could be the beginning of something very different. But also, like, you know, like, I got to kind of give it its flowers for, like, having Higgins go to the Negro League Baseball Museum and then them taking literally 5 minutes to talk about Satchel Paige. Like, that alone was worth it. Yeah.
Wonderful. So, like, I could have done a whole episode on Higgins just learning like Negro Casey, League baseball.
Yes.
Like just that whole thing. Like it was really, really wonderful. And I'm with you on the, like, as much as I didn't love it being set here and seeing Kansas City, but I did love that they used that opportunity to A, showcase what women's soccer in America could be, yeah. You know, and can be anywhere. That, like, seeing that, seeing the Negro League baseball museum, kind of hinting at the jazz stuff, but like not showing it, like that's there too. Like,
yes,
that you get to see that, like, there is some culture here too that isn't, you know, like in, you know, alt-right shit. No. So, I did appreciate that. But just overall, I didn't add a lot for me. More than anything, I appreciated, and God, I hope the kid never hears me, because it's nothing against the kid that played his son. Like, I'm sure that kid's a really wonderful person, but he's a terrible actor, and I'm so fucking glad they recast Ted's son.
Oh God, yes. Oh God, yes. Yes, please. That kid was so bad. I mean, he was like an 80s, like I can't even put a finger on it, but he was very bad. Like, I just did not like him at all. Like, he was like, you know what he was like? He was like Jake, what's his name from, when he was in, Jingle All the Way. Like, Jingle All the Way is like, I love that movie, but like literally that, like Jake Lloyd is terrible, objectively terrible in that movie. Like, he is terrible. Like, you go, Arnold is trying to do all this shit for that fucking kid? No. And it's not because he's a spoiled brat. It's that he's just terrible. Like, not a good actor. And it's like, and then when I heard he was like, I mean, you know, and like, we didn't have to say it. We didn't have to go so hard on him. Like, I'm not saying that. But like, literally, like, he was like terrible. And like, we saw the writing on the wall. Like, he never should have been cast. Like, Lucas didn't know what the fuck he was doing.
Like, yeah, his casting choices were questionable at best.
Like, some of them were genius, right? Like, but whenever it came to Anakin, he just didn't know what to do. But all to say, going back, like, yes, it's kind of great that he recast. I mean, especially because Ted is going to have his family there. And is this also a TV show about reconciliation? Like,
I mean,
is Ted and his wife gonna, like, his ex gonna get back together? Because her husband is, or her boyfriend, or whatever the hell he was, there's no
longer apparently, he's apparently out of the picture, which, good. Like, at the end of season 3, like, it's evident that, like, she is seeing that douchebag for who he is. So, but I did appreciate that her and Ted, like, it wasn't like, oh, they're back together and everything's fine. They are, you know, like, co-parenting, doing the separate thing. And then there's a lot about this episode that I appreciated in the larger mythos of Ted Lasso. It's just, I don't think it was a strong episode. And, you know, Ted Lasso is one of those shows where it's like, I love every, like Parks and Rec. I love every episode. And so, like, the lower episodes are still episodes I like. They're just not episodes that, like, I wouldn't rate them 9.5 out of 10. Whereas, like, almost every other episode, I'm like, oh, this is 9 out of 10, like, it's top tier. And this is like a 8 out of 10, you know? Okay. So I'm only down on it because I'm so high on every other episode. But we'll see. It, you know, it's going to be week to week. We'll, you know, keep checking in. We mentioned it earlier. Next week, We're both going to see the end of Oak Street. Can't wait. I don't want to say it's the most excited I've been for a movie. I will say outside of superhero stuff, it's probably the most excited I've been for a movie all year. Unfortunately, the trailers have given way too much away, but this, it's new. You know, it's not adapted from something. So I'm excited for it because I don't have any even if it's like stupidly goofy bad, like I'm still like glad that I'm going to get to see something big that isn't based on a book that a bajillion people read. So. Yeah.
Absolutely. Nope. Very excited about this. We shall definitely see. I'm going to see it in IMAX, of course, because you know that's what you do, because it's a big screen movie. So I'm very excited. Hopefully it connects. And yeah, we'll be back next week.
All right. Until then, go check out everything else we do over at xwingfiles.com, or you can read our written work over at Adam's website.
Yeah, themovieowl.com. And we just finished up some coverage of Fantasia, and we're headed into a bunch of home video releases. And there's a lot of big stuff out there. I will say this. I just watched Troy for the first time in like 20 years. And Jesus Christ, that movie's terrible. What are people talking about? You know what? Anybody who says that Troy is better than anybody who says that Troy is a better movie than Odyssey, you're racist and you're stupid. You are a stupid human being.
I would rather watch Gladiator 2 than Troy.
Yes. Oh, yes. Absolutely.
And Gladiator 2 was not good.
No. But anyhow, right now on the site, Identity, a movie that I thoroughly enjoyed and chuckled all the way through on, because I forgot.
Identity is a lot of fun, man. Like, what a fucking group of actors, man.
Yes.
Just such a good ensemble and such a good, like, central performance.
Yeah.
To avoid spoilerish talk.
No, but I mean, it's 20-year-old film. You can I ruin it in the. I don't ruin it, but I ruin it. Like, let's just be honest. Like, Prue Taylor Vince is like, I say it in my, review is that he is literally one of the greatest actors of our generation. And if he had just slightly better looks, he probably would have been a superstar. That's how talented he is. And of course, like, Cusack and everybody else are working with him towards that performance, right? And it's a cuckoo bananas movie. Like, when I first saw it, I was like, what? You guys are fucking nuts. You guys are stupid. But it's stupid in the best way possible. Like, you know, like when you have a friend that tells you these crazy jokes and they're funny, but they're stupid. And you just look at me and go, you're stupid, dude. Like, you're really dumb. You do realize that, but you can't help but laugh. Like, that's Identity. Is like, it's a highly entertaining movie that, like, if you haven't seen it, just stop listening right now and go watch it, because damn, it's going to throw you off.
It's going to throw you off.
Oh yeah, it is. And
it's like the shit that they don't make movies about. And like, they just don't do stuff like this anymore.
No.
And if they do, it goes to streaming and nobody watches it.
So. And nobody cares about it because it's terrible. Like, here's the thing is that Identity, like, I'm saying it's a stupid movie, but it's a highly entertaining movie and it's cuckoo bananas, but it is a well-made movie. Like, nowadays, they would make this movie and it wouldn't be well-made. That's the difference.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it's got a 4K release, so, read the review and then go watch it, or just watch it blindly. Like, it's 90 minutes, and Jesus, like, I cannot remember the more fun I had, and I forgot how, like, fun the movie is. Just go watch it. Like, it's a hell of a fun, it was a hell of a good time revisiting it. But avoid Troy. Like, it's just a dumb movie. Like, I'm going to review it, and it's just dumb. I just do not. Like, I didn't. I was like, why am I doing this? I'm like, Brad Pitt with a fake English accent? Give me a freaking break. Good Lord.
Yeah, I pass on that. So, right, we will we'll see you guys next week.
Next week. Number 1 Star Wars, number 2 comics, number 3 Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit, number 4 Mario, number 5 Weird Al, number 6 Batman, number 7 Kal-El, number 8 Simpsons, number 9 TV, number 10 every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but they're really all sold out. See it all together if you're with me now.